Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Go. It's a minute and a half past the hour. This is Monday, the 14th day of November, 2016. Big darkness soon come. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And in point of fact, it's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and participate in the real-time multimedia madcap, zany, wacky extravaganza that happens there during the 3 hours of the program each and every weekday night from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and if you do jump into the chat room, if you pick yourself out a password and a screen name, you will immediately be met by Anatole Jug-a-Punch, Labor Man Steve from Georgistan, and all capably moderated by longtime and veteran indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who is keeping the powder on his space folding third stage guild navigator abilities dry for the time being. More folks will be along presently, and I heartily encourage you to join in. So this is More and Monday, but I've got a sneaking suspicion that, man, it's all More and Monday for the foreseeable future. And by the foreseeable future, I mean till January the 20th, 2021. At the very least. There's no way that it isn't. This is our reality. Live with it and deal with it. This, by the way, is a... This is a listener-supported broadcast. We pulled up a little bit short over the weekend, pulled up a little bit short on Mike and Cascadia's challenge. And one thing I found out, or noticed, we have absolutely zero subscribers on the 14th day of any month because no subscriptions rolled in today. So let me say first that we badly need subscribers today, tonight. You know, eventually we would like to get to the point where we have $410 a month subscribers. We are a long, 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 long way away from that. But just to get 100 even, or be able to, however it works out, we have zero subscribers today. So if you would like to be a part of keeping this resistance alive, keeping this resistance going, then head on over to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute, click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and put in whatever amount you like. And we do, by way of saying thank you, we have bumper stickers to send out. And I try to sit down once a week and put some more in the mail. Okay? Hand lettered and everything. We don't rely on that demon computer box to do our envelopes. No. This evening it would be great to have some subscribers. Beyond that, we need to raise $200 an evening. And actually, it comes out to something closer to $270 this evening. But if, I do that. I try to keep track. I try to give a number out every evening. But it does. It adds to the stress. It really, really does. That's all I can say. But there's also a correction to that. Note coming in from our buddy Tom in the Bay Area. The subject line is now more than ever. Tom says, I meant to do this on Friday, but the post office was closed. That it was. We had a little discussion about that and Monday holidays, and maybe I'm a little clearer on it. Not sure. In today's mail is $100. I'm trying to get you 50 every month, but I've been behind with this with the election. I gave what I could to Bernie and some locals. Now that's over. Your program is more important than ever. So $50 for November and the other 50. Well, a few months back, I bet a friend of mine, a dedicated hilarian, $5 that Trump would win. She thought that was impossible, of course, so I figure I'd multiply it by 10, and you could use it. We can, Tom. Thank you very much. I have a thought or two regarding fundraising in general. Kick them around and do what you think is right. I cringe, Tom says, every time you say that if we had 400 subscribers, you wouldn't have to fundraise anymore. Yes, you would. People come and go and circumstances change. That's absolutely true. That is absolutely true. The other thing is, on the all-too-rare occasions when you do raise the daily 200 or even more, it shouldn't mean you're done for the day, just that the goal has been met and keep going. And if you're over, the next day's goal is still $200. Use the extra to build a reserve, replace some equipment, or maybe even someday get some health insurance. Just my 2 cents. Hang in there. I wish I could get to Tracy's for the meetings. Thank you, Tom. Thank you very kindly. And that email set off a long train of thought for me, especially, but not limited to, the subject line. Now more than ever. And yeah, I think so. We had a nice long 8 years where we could all sort of take a little nap and every now and then look up at the funny little right-wingers who were so vicious and so mean-spirited and so racist and so bigoted and so xenophobic, so misogynistic, so homophobic, so ignorant, so mean. Did I mention mean? I think I mentioned mean twice. Well, that's okay. It's kind of getting exponential anyway. Well, that's over. And on the other hand, Post has been elected president by a not quite majority of the people who cast votes in this country. 25.6% to Hillary Clinton's 25.9%. And 49.6% of Americans said, fuck it. Just not going. Not going to bother. They're both terrible. Oh, well, what the hell? You get the idea. I don't know. Maybe they were all sitting at home listening to Rush. And if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. Ah, turns out you did. So there's that. But now more than ever. Yeah. And I guess this is by way of asking a favor, although it sort of inures to all our benefit. There's a lot of fear out there. There's a lot of uncertainty. And I want this place that has been here for over 12 years, I want it understood that this is a safe space. In cyberspace, I do everything I can to make sure that no goddamn wingnuts get through here. I make sure that no right wingers waste your time. I'm not going to have some right wing POS on this program and debate him or her so that you can be amazed at my conversational brilliance in showing one of them what for. There are other radio hosts who have cornered that gig. I won't do it. I see no benefit to it. But I see something here. I see a purpose. Maybe it's because I'm such a sunshiny, rosy little personality that places like this, places like Malloy's, places like FYI, my buddy Rick Smith, are going to become more important than ever as centers of the resistance. Not the loyal opposition, the resistance. As no collaboration zones. As places where people can come and engage in good faith conversation and dialogue. Places where we can bolster each other from the fears that are stalking this nation as I speak. Now more than ever. And so what Tom says about fundraising is true. We struggle to raise the $200. That number is going to stay right there. But the number that I do want to see change, the number that I do hope goes up, is the number of people participating in this conversation. Because we've got to have it. If we don't, then we're all going to sit around in a sort of isolated misery waiting for the other shoe to drop. Waiting for the knock on the door or the phone to ring in the middle of the night. And we won't have anything or anyone to look to in times of crisis. We have seen, and I'm not talking about the royal we, not me and that mouse in my pocket. We members of this community have seen what this community can mean in times of need and crisis. And it can be a profound force for good. We've got at least 4 years of resistance ahead of us. The journey will not be easy, nor the load light. People are already talking about what they are feeling and what they want to do, that they just want to withdraw. Well, this is a place where we can push back against that, where we can stand shoulder to shoulder, where we can talk to each other, and this place more than any other. Oops, my voice cracked a little bit. Nobody else does Friday on the front porch. If somebody else does Friday on the front porch, it'll be because we proved that it was both helpful and necessary. Nobody else does long form conversation the way we do here. Nobody engages in discussion like we do here. And yet this little radio network struggles along on pennies. Pennies. Because I have been willing to do that, and that is, I don't know, part of my character. That I think this is more important than trying to turn into some sort of media juggernaut. Sure, I guess I could take what little we've got here and I could make this little space as video friendly as I wanted and just post pre-recorded crap on YouTube. And with YouTube advertising, I could probably make a little bit of change. But the only way I can do that is if I think that my voice is more important than yours. The only way I can do that is if I think that I'm giving marching orders to other people. Not only can I not do that, I will not do that. Because it's not a leader problem we have. We're not little wing nuts looking for Steve Bannon to Steve Bannon to follow. Racist Bannon, remember? We have to process through this stuff. And we have to get over things like butthurtness. We have to get over all of that. And we have to unify. And we have to resist, and we have to not, and we have to adopt no collaboration as a way of going forward. That's about as leadery as I will get. And there's stuff out there that suggests that that's going to be necessary. The Kumbaya Democrats are already at it. With some of them saying, well, you know, maybe we could put together a bill that would do something about Chinese currency manipulation and ending the carried interest loophole and infrastructure. Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. Meanwhile, Paul Ryan, Rince Penis, Racist Bannon, and yes, Post himself are sitting there giggling. Because just as quick as the Kumbaya Democrats start marching down the road, collaborating away, they're going to get a 2x4 in the back of the head. The minute that they are no longer necessary. I don't know if you happen to notice this or not, but over the weekend, Paul Ryan told Chris Wallace that he's coming after Medicare and Social Security. In no uncertain terms. He didn't say maybe. He didn't say, if. He said he's going to do it. And he's got the votes. And my senator, Joe Manchin, Democrat. Whoa! I always laugh when I say Joe Manchin, Democrat. He says that that Post needs to listen to moderate Dems, you know, like him. Joe, really, fuck off. I mean, just fuck the right to fuckity fuck off. Everybody knows. You're not fooling anybody anymore. And frankly, the balance of power in the Senate is such that it really doesn't matter if you go ahead and just become the Republican you have always been, Joe. Goodbye. I mean, come on, chinless Mitch. Can't you offer him some sort of committee chairmanship so that he can go over there and at least, you know, fuck us without the silly pretense that he's a Democrat. Goddamn chinless Mitch, please. But Joe Manchin is probably a useful tool to chinless Mitch as a Democrat. Because, you know, Joe Manchin has no loyalty. If anybody gives any sensitive policy or strategy or any of that kind of information to Joe Manchin, he'll tell chinless Mitch in a minute. Talk about faithless. But anyway, they're out there and they're tuning up the Kumbaya Kazoo Band. And we're going to have to be organized if we have any hope of opposing that stuff. By the way, where Social Security and Medicare are concerned, here's a quickie. here's how this works. We all know that to a Republican, Igmfu, I-G-M-F-U, isn't just a slogan, it's a way of life. I got mine, fuck you. And because that's how Republicans live, they assume that's how it's a human cognitive failing thing. You assume everybody else thinks like you. God knows we learned a little bit about that last Tuesday. And so what they'll do is, pay attention, it's coming. It'll be January, but maybe make a note of it, because I've gone into the prognosticating business. What they'll do is they will say, no one currently receiving Social Security benefits or Medicare will have their benefits change at all, not one bit. We're only going to reform the system for those who will be getting benefits in the future. At which point in time, they expect that all the Social Security and Medicare recipients in the country will go, Igmfu, man! Igmfu! Because, see, this country already did that once before to my generation, back when Chris Matthews first got the tingle down his leg, when old Tip and old Ronnie took off their jackets and rolled up their sleeves and screwed my generation to the wall by making us work till we're 67 for Social Security. So they'll that's how they'll do it. Now the question is, will the current recipients of Medicare and Social Security go along with that? I'd say the odds are pretty good, because the alternative, and they know it, is that the Republicans might look at them and say, well, okay, I mean, you know, we can fuck with yours too, buddy. Or that's the fear. People don't necessarily understand the amount of power they have if they stand together. And theoretically, this should be a bipartisan issue. This is, you know, it's not like only Republicans get Social Security and Medicare. It's not like only men. It's not like only women. It's not like only Klansmen. It's not like only people of color get these things. This is something that is available to every citizen of this country. And so with that in mind, it should be easy for us to form a leave-it-alone coalition. But that's a resistance. And so the question arises, how much will do we have to resist? But it's been a... it's been a weird weekend this past. It was an absolutely bizarre day of college football, and we all know I'm a college football fan. And right now, all across the country, and understandably in other parts of the world, there's a certain segment of folks going, "Oh no, he's going to talk about that plebeian football." But there was a Saturday felt like a continuation of Tuesday. The University of Michigan, at number 3, marched proudly into Iowa City, Iowa, into a stadium named for a young man who died fighting global fascism, Niall Kinnick. He was a Republican. Did you know that? Iowa's native son, Niall Kinnick. He was a Republican. But he understood the necessity of destroying global fascism. That's how much the Republican Party has changed. But they marched in, and see there at there in Iowa City. At Niall Kinnick Stadium, way, way, way years ago, I think it was Hayden Fry, had the visitors' locker room painted pink there at Niall Kinnick Stadium. And it and he announced it at the time as, you know, a sort of psyop against the opponents. And to a certain extent, it's worked. Now, this has a lot to do with inherent biases and bigotries. Pink? Huh, he thinks we're sissies. Right? So, guess what? The University of Michigan is coached by a guy who is almost as nasty a megalomaniac as Trump himself. And so, lo and behold, the mighty Michigan Wolverines marched into Niall Kinnick Stadium and redecorated. No, I'm not kidding. They redecorated. Redecorated the visitors' locker room there to cover up all vestiges of the pinkness. Because they're mighty Wolverines, not sissies. And then proceeded on Saturday evening to take the field and couldn't find their asses with both hands and a methane detector. They screwed up all over the place, and lo and behold, poor little Iowa, who is not having the best season, kicked a field goal in the waning seconds and drove a dagger through the heart of Michigan Wolverine fans everywhere. Maybe if they'd spent more time worrying about playing their game instead of worrying about whether sitting in a pink locker room would challenge their manliness, they'd still be undefeated. But no. And what a classy bunch the play-by-play folks are. I listen on the radio. You know, I'm a cord cutter here. And the play-by-play team for the Homer play-by-play team for the University of Michigan is terrible. Jesus, they couldn't even as the field goal was being kicked, they said, "Well, and as you can tell by the sound of the crowd, the kick is." And the fans are storming the field. Nice, boys. Nice. On the other hand, on a bizarre Saturday, the lowly Pitt Panthers, now of the Atlantic Coast Conference, went down to Death Valley in Clemson, South Carolina, which also happens to be the old slave plantation. No, really. The campus of Clemson University is the old slave plantation of John C. Calhoun, who once said that slavery was not just a necessary evil, but a positive social good. John C. Calhoun, who early on was among the first to try to tear the young Union apart. They went down to his old slave plantation grounds and played dead up even with the mighty Clemson Tigers of Dabo Swinney. Until they too got down to the final minutes, final ticks of the clock, the final seconds, and they kicked a field goal. And their play-by-play guy is a guy named Bill Hargrove. Hargrove also does play-by-play for the Steelers. If you get a chance, he's worth listening to. He's good. Pure pro. He was handpicked by the Rooney family after the death of a broadcast hero of mine to do the Steelers broadcasts. Yeah. Because the previous Steelers broadcaster had also been the longtime voice of the Mountaineers. And it was something to behold to hear a game called by Jack Fleming. Jack Fleming's play-by-play guy was a guy named Woody O'Hara, or O'Hara. And from time to time, and on the Steelers side, he had to cope with a guy named Myron Cope. And in both cases, there were glorious moments when either one of them, and they tended to prattle, would be prattling along, and Jack would just say, "Shut up, Woody. Shut up, Myron." Bill Hargrove. I'm sorry, not Hargrove, Hillgrove. Bill Hillgrove. Was a pro, and it was a joy to hear the broadcast. But the powers that be went falling all over themselves on Saturday, and sort of made a mess of the playoff rankings. They probably won't change much. On the other hand, Alabama beat Mississippi State 51-3. It really did. It had the feeling of an analogy to the previous Tuesday. As Stephen New York points out, covering up the pinkness, the goddess of irony struck back. Luda says, "I understand, Bob. My beloved Boise State lost to a very inferior Wyoming team at the last few minutes, ruining our undefeated season. Now we will be 12-1 and yet again be left out of any good bowl games, so the good old boys Southern butt-kissing teams can get in there. But it still hurts so much losing to a safety at the end." I understand, Luda. Again, I am a Mountaineer fan. I know heartbreak. I know it well. It was a continuation of Tuesday, all right. But Steve, who is a Buckeye fan, said, "I got to tell you, I was happy from Saturday." Okay, enough snark. But Bob, I need some good news. Any good news? I'm trying here. You know, sometimes we just got to chuckle a little bit about what we can chuckle a little bit about. Because here in a minute, we're going into the swamp. Oh, and big thanks going out. Now, on the 14th of the month, we have subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Matt, and thank you very kindly to Robert in Australia for jumping in, and that's a big help. And that means that our fundraising goal for the evening is now somewhere down around $230. Thank you, guys. Thank you very kindly. No, we are. We're going to go into the swamp. Because, note coming in from Ron in the far, I don't know if it's frozen or short pants north. I can't keep track. Bob, don't forget how they gutted the GI Bill. It used to be that a vet had a lifelong pass to go to college, university to better his life, or just to learn how to become a lawyer. No more. Oh, nice. Well played. Well played, Ron. Yeah, absolutely, to better her life or maybe just become a lawyer. No more. The Vietnam vets and the vets who had to serve in Iraq and Afghanistan now have education benefits with a finite window of time. In other words, it's no longer the GI Bill of Rights, it's the GI Bill of get it now or forget it. Thank you very much for your service. Next! I was thinking over the weekend, somewhere along the way, there's a conversation to be had about volunteer militaries. Probably not now. You know, Randy in PA a minute ago said, "I know you're reluctant to, but please talk about why people have to support both the network and the talk show host. People should, if they can, support the Horn and the Rick Smith Show and the White Rose Society. People should, if they can, support both Progressive Voices and the Mike Malloy Show." Absolutely. Absolutely. And these are places that provide a haven. And we're going to need that haven. We're going to need a clearinghouse of information. We're going to need a because, yeah, you can go on a message board. Sure, I guess. Or maybe you can get it all from Twitter or Facebook. But it's there's something about the immediacy of live broadcast. And for me, live radio. That makes things remarkably different. It makes for a remarkably different context when you actually hear somebody's truth as opposed to see it sterilely written on a Facebook post or, you know, in an email or a tweet or whatever. And in ways, that's the difference between and I've mentioned this in the past, the difference between a literate and a pre-literate society. There's an argument to be made that pre-literate societies probably had much better memories than what we have. But it will be absolutely necessary. But here's the trick. And with social media out there, this becomes a possibility. I saw this, our buddy Alex out in Arizona, Stan, said, you know, people, somebody posted something saying, you know, if you don't like the way that the TV channels handled the election, subscribe to the New York Times. And when I read that, I'm, whoo, what? I have something fun to share with you in a moment. And Alex said, okay, great, but why not support progressive media instead? Independent progressive media. Because see, we don't have to worry about pissing off any giant corporations here. The New York Times does. And, you know, the New York Times is up to it, too. They finally got around to writing a story about post-election violence. And guess what the first paragraph was? The first paragraph, by God, was both-siderism. No, really. In New York, men shouted, "You're next," at a black policewoman making shooting motions with their hands. In California, a high school student told a classmate, "You support Trump, you hate Mexicans," before throwing her to the ground and hitting her. Online, anonymous users wrote on Twitter, "Just reported you to ICE. Expect a van at your door tomorrow to illegal immigrants." Okay, one. Even mentioning some isolated... Okay, I guess, you know, because the Times is committed to both-siderism. But even those examples are pretty far apart. And, oh, thanks, New York Times style book, for the use of the term illegal immigrants. Not undocumented, but, you know, illegal human beings. Because, after all, if a human being is illegal for being a human being, well, you can just round them up and put them in a camp and let them concentrate for a while. Before you start digging the trenches or building you get the idea. Because it is, after all, going to be physically impossible to deport 11 million people. Statistically impossible. Why, by God, Post would have to be president for the next 100 years. But, yeah, that... So, anyway, in the story where both sides do it, we go down a little ways, and we find this. And let me get my New York Times news reading voice on. Because, you see, the New York Times are real journalists practicing First Amendment journalism. While many of the widely shared complaints of harassment... that's the wrong voice. For the New York Times... While many of the widely shared complaints of harassment do not constitute criminal activity, they are stirring fear among marginalized groups. Feeling helpless, Ayman Zawahiri, who is Muslim, turned to Facebook to share with friends what her 12-year-old son had experienced in school in Gainesville, Florida. The boy, whose United States-born parents are of Egyptian descent, had come home complaining that his seventh-grade classmates teased him about Mr. Trump's victory and accused him of being part of the Islamic State. He was very devastated, asking if he was going to be kicked out of the country, his mother said. I'm feeling like a terrible mother. The more and more I push him for information, the more he gets upset. I'm in a complete panic.
Did you catch that? Did you catch the word that the for-profit professional journalist, writer, reporter, Caitlin Dickerson used there? So, a little boy, a little 12-year-old boy, just goes to school, 12 years old, so that's probably like, what, sixth grade? Little boy goes to sixth grade, and he just has the misfortune of being, you know, Egyptian in America. And, you know, by the way, while we're at it, Egyptian does not necessarily mean Muslim, because some of the oldest Christian communities on earth were to be found in Egypt, and they, well, they're still there. They're called Coptic Christians. Christianity got a quick foothold in Egypt, after all, because little baby Yeshua, the little baby not quite yet brown-skinned Palestinian itinerant day laborer and semi-literate rabbi, had sojourned in Egypt once upon a time in an effort, so the Gospels tell us, not to be killed by Herod. And by the way, never mind, that's not too much work for that joke. But notice that Caitlin Dickerson describes what happened to the little boy being accused. Did you get that? Of course you did. Being accused of being part of ISIS. Well, in Caitlin Dickerson's privileged little world, his fellow students were just teasing him. It was just teasing. Yeah. Hey, Allie, you know, we're just kidding. I mean, you know you always get picked at least fifth or sixth for kickball and shit. I mean, hell, we're just teasing you, buddy. We're just teasing. I mean, we don't have parents who sit around at home at night and talk about how they hope all of you people are rounded up and maybe gassed or something, or at least run out of the country. We're just teasing. Teased. Caitlin, can I call you Caitlin? Caitlin, you were on the right track. The word you wanted does, in fact, begin with the letter T. It's a little bit longer. It's got a couple more syllables. And maybe that's why you didn't use it. Because it might be too hard for the goddamn Trumpansies who subscribe to the New York Times or read it online. Yeah, like the Trumpansies read the New York Times, Caitlin. Come on. It's okay. You can use a three-syllable word. Tormented. Let's see how that reads. Does that detract from Caitlin's journalistic objectivity? Have you ever watched 12-year-old boys go after a lone 12-year-old boy? It ain't teasing.
Had come home had come home complaining that his seventh grade classmates tormented him about Mr. Trump's victory and accused... Yeah, that works! That sure works, Caitlin Dickerson! But then again, this one just blew right past the editor, and who gives a fuck, right? It's just a little Egyptian boy. Not like a good God-fearing, upstanding, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, amosexual, white child. Mm-hmm. A lot of stories like that. A whole bunch of stories like that. Oh, hey, by the way, the challenge, I just got a note from Mike in Cascadia. The challenge is still on from Friday. And Mike has even gone so far as to add $25 to it, too. So $125 will get doubled, okay? That's how we'll keep this going. And maybe if y'all help spread the word and I keep working and we all keep working together, maybe we'll grow this conversation so that more people who want to participate in it can. And I've said in the past, if I have to expand this program, add an hour to it, 2 hours, hell, three, I will. If I have to do 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the evening, I will. Because that's my commitment to making this conversation as available to people as they need, not want, but need for it to be. Meanwhile, note coming from Ron and Raleigh, subject line, Goebbels taught them well. Today on my way to work, I stopped at Hardee's to get a biscuit for breakfast. In front of me were three old white guys. The first guy was telling his buds about all the anti-Trump protesters being in the covert employ of, that's right, you guessed it, George Soros. Oh, fuck. I don't know, do I? Maybe I need to get all the fun words out of the broadcast so that more people will want to participate. Maybe I'll try. But that one just kind of snuck out. Yeah, of course, yeah. All those protesters out there in the streets, Oakland, New York, Austin, Seattle, Chicago, yeah, they were all getting a check from George Soros. Anyway, Ron writes, he was paying all these folks $15 an hour and providing buses to take them to all the anti-Trump rallies. He then said that Post was going to get all their names and report them to the IRS because he knew that none of these miscreants were going to report their ill-gotten lucre on their taxes. Now, you and I both know when any right-winger invokes George Soros, bullshit is sure to follow. So when I got to work, I did a short Google search. Lo and behold, the first two pages were full of this crap. I then went to Snopes to get the facts. Of course, the story was the big lie that Goebbels talked about. The reason these guys believe this shit is because it fits their worldview. They would never cross-check to see if the story was factual. They just believe. With Steve Bannon in the White House, racist Bannon, lies like this will be commonplace, and Trump pansies will swallow it all, hook, line, and sinker. And see, and you want to know the cool part, Ron? Here it is. It makes it easier to beat the hell out of the protesters because they're not really exercising their First Amendment right. No, they're not exactly exercising freedom of speech. They're just being paid to be out there. So they're not really aggrieved with Post and racist Bannon and Rince Penis. And, you know, Steve... tiny, and I mean Mike, tiny enough to fit in a woman's vagina. Pence. But yeah, that's when you know these protesters. I don't know. That just doesn't seem right. I mean, deal with it. He won. I was told on my own Facebook page yesterday that Trump won by a landslide. Yeah, a landslide. Bill writes from Florida. Fear in the air with Donald on deck. We've lived in the same block in Fort Myers, Florida for many years. Some years ago, there was a mix of most every people. Now it's almost all Latino, a good thing. The people here care so much for their children, and there is no stealing here. With Donald about to take over, I can feel fear in the air. The Mexican people and others are looking over their shoulder. Their papers may or may not be in order. I care not at all about that. I feel for them. And I know this fear is wrong. And it has no place in America. Well, something like 25.6% of America disagrees with you, Bill. They think it does have a place in America, and it's their place. And here, you want even more fun. If you express the Trump voter as a percentage of the entire population of the United States, the number of people who voted for Trump gets down to about 18% of the population. Mm-hmm. 18%. 18% of the population of this country are going to drive us off a cliff. Oh, and by the way, I just want to make something clear here. One moment. There have been a few expressions on our side of we have to give him a chance. No. Not me. Now, again, I don't sit here and tell you what to think or how to think it, but no, not for me. The analogies are too easy. But history is full of examples of giving someone a chance who then took that chance and broke countries, kingdoms, principalities, nations, states, all to pieces. Yeah. And it is... Look. I'm not important. I'm not a somebody. Post doesn't need me to give him a chance. He doesn't give a good goddamn what I think or what you think. He's going to do what he's going to do regardless of whether the Kumbaya Kazoo chorus is serenading him or not. On January the 20th, 2017, they own the whole government. If they succeed, then by far the greater share of glory unto them for having done so without me, and I'll just have to live with the shame. But if they fail... they fail on their own. If they fail, they fail with racist Bannon. Post's idea of Karl Rove. They fail with Rince Penis. They fail with Kellyanne Conway. They fail with David Duke. Man, I can't wait until he gets appointed head of the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. At this point, would you be surprised? Jeremy in Vermont with a note says, but Bob,
Last night, Post sat his surly, lily white fucking ass on 60 Minutes and said he knew of one or two incidents of poor behavior. And when asked about people being bullied or threatened over race, he said to the people doing it, stop. And if I needed to, leaned into the camera and said, stop it again, as if any of these fucking pigs were still listening and care what he said, which they don't. Yeah, I noticed that too. I'll look into the camera and say it if it will help. He said that, if it will help. It's in there. You can go and watch the recording. I'll say it again if it will help. The jackass may have a third grade vocabulary, but he knows how to convey convey having his fingers crossed behind his back to his mouth walking, knuckle breathing followers. If it will help. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Don't stop. If it will help. Then, of course, President Not Sure gave a press conference today. The guy who told the world he wants Post to succeed. By the way, there are, if you just need a giggle here and there, keep an eye out for the What Did You Do, Joe set of memes. These things are running fast and furious. Like, it'll be a picture of Barack Obama and a picture of Biden. What did you do, Joe? I glued the Oval Office desk drawer shut and put a post-it on it that said secret Muslim agenda. Or, what did you do, Joe? I limited the TV in the vice presidential residence to nothing but gay porn and MSNBC. I've had several laughs. We're going to need those laughs. We're going to have to learn to laugh. Yes, indeed. Meanwhile, Matt, who just became a subscriber, Matt in San Francisco, President's Press Conference. Hi, Bob. After listening to part of the President's Press Conference today, I don't feel any better than I did last week. Is it just me, or did President Obama basically say there is continuity in government and certain stability will continue no matter who the president is? What the... The Republicans will soon control everything. First time since 1928, and we all know how well that turned out. See crash of 1929. My husband keeps telling me to calm down and not worry so much. Maybe things will get better. He's only been in this country after Obama turned the worst around. He does not understand the havoc these people can do, especially when there is no one to stop them. If I thought the Democrats would fight like hell to stop everything they plan to do, I would have some hope to hold on to. But them Dems have already said they're looking forward to working together where there's common ground. In other words, kiss the social safety nets goodbye. I can't. I just can't. Oh, and by the way, I want to offer just a quick moment of admiration and respect. You know how people have their sig lines, or if you've got a mobile device, it'll, you know, sent from my blah blah blah. Well, you can modify that. Matt modified his. Every note I get from Matt says, "Sent from my overpriced communication device, made in horrendous working conditions." Huh? Yeah, that's right. Jeremy in Vermont, another one of the really good "What have you done, Joe?" things going around is I left your Kenyan birth certificate in the Oval Office desk drawer and a prayer rug next to your bed. You gotta have a giggle. But Matt, I understand. Maybe I don't know. Maybe we've got some kumbaya folks who don't, but I do. When Matt says, if I thought the Democrats would fight like hell to stop everything they plan to do, I'd have some hope to hold on to. But no, we're gonna say things like, somebody here has to be the adults, and we've got to make sure and keep the government open. And that'll be their excuse for capitulating. Because in the end, look, if you're a member of the House of Representatives or the Senate, Igumfu, you've got yours. You've got the best health care money the American government can offer. You've got a retirement that just won't quit. You've got a nice life, a good salary. Why are you going to monkey wrench that? Exactly, yeah. Well, hey, good news. Mike in Cascadia's challenge is down to $115. Thank you very kindly, Steve, Karen, and Cletus. Thank you very much indeed. And we're at like 2:30 to go, so 125 gets matched. We're done. We're not done with, but we've reached our goal. I'm taking Tom's advice into account here. We've reached our goal, and we can keep going and not sweat. Dadgummit. But Bob is my trademark, says Randy in PA. Marty said, but how did George Soros know who all those people were to get him to protest? Is that from Alex Jones? Marty. George Soros knows who everybody is. He's the real master who runs the whole puppet show. And these poor, economically uncertain, anxiety-driven Republicans are just trying to push back against having their strings pulled. Don't you understand? Sure. I mean, because, you know, George Soros is a Jew. And we all know how racist Bannon feels about Jews. Yeah. Marty says, give Post a chance. Sure, I'll give Post a chance. The same chance the current guy got. Well, but see, IOKIYAR, right? All right. Yeah, just a little of this and a little of that. I have mentioned that my beloved daughter works at Hellmart. And my beloved daughter works at Hellmart because she was hired specifically for the upcoming frenzy of capitalism known as the Christian holiday season. She may or may not have a job after the Christian frenzy, capitalist frenzy known as the Christian holiday season. But she has a job for now. And that job requires her to work both Thanksgiving Day and so-called Black Friday. And with that in mind, we won't be doing Thanksgiving dinner. Because I'm not going to do Thanksgiving dinner without my daughter sitting at the table. And hopefully we'll do Thanksgiving dinner with our grandkids too. So the way that works out, we'll probably do it on Saturday.
So I would appreciate your input via email, Twitter, that's Facebook, what have you. Would you like to have some live progressive conversation radio on Thanksgiving night? I'll do it if you want it. Otherwise, there's not going to be much in the way of live broadcasting that night, I don't think. And given what transpired last Tuesday, and given the fact that I'm already getting notes and emails and what have you about I dread this holiday season because I'm going to have to listen to my crazy old uncle gloat, or some variation on the theme. Maybe by the end of that day, some of us might feel a little bit of relief at being able to step back from the table and the tryptophan and engage in conversation. Randy and PA just said, no one will be around, Bob. They'll probably be traveling. Take the day off. That's possible. But that's the first vote. Take the day off, Bob. But if you would like to have that conversation, I'm not going to be doing anything except going and picking up Margie from work at about 10 o'clock that night. Take her there, shore one, pick her up. So, you know, your thoughts are more than welcome on that topic. Well, David in South Carolina says, if Dems do block everything, watch media portray them as obstructionists, sore losers, or something to put them in a bad light. Oh, and Trumpanzies also said DNC paid all the protesters and got them out to the protest, the Trump's rallies. Really? The same DNC who couldn't get their voters out to vote? Yeah, sure. My best news in a week, says David. Clemson lost. Well, yeah, okay, David, you got one more thing to finish the job. I don't know if you and Will, if y'all and Will Muschamp can get this done, but if you could do us the kindness of beating Clemson, the Gamecocks, I'd take that as mighty kind. But of course the media will do that. The media are already in the business. Okay, so here's how it works. Trump normalized hate. Now, the for-profit media, including Washington Post and Politico and the New York Times, you know, the usual suspects, are normalizing Trump. Trump normalized hate. The for-profit media normalized Trump. Okay, vote coming in from Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. I'll be home alone because I have to work the following day on Thanksgiving. I'd love nothing more than to have you here on Thanksgiving Day. Besides, most people eat mid-afternoon. We'll be ready for some left talk. That or sound asleep. I mean, you know how it goes. I get kind of Darren McGavin-ish this time of year. This is the time of year when I fall in love with turkey, like the rest of us, once a year. And we sit around, and with that first bite of turkey, we go, why don't we eat more turkey? And then 3 days later, when the last of the getting kind of tiresome turkey's finally gone, we go, oh, yeah, that's why we don't eat turkey. But to get right down to the ground with it, yeah, it's the turkey. But for me, it's the dressing. Not stuffing, dressing. That I have once a year. And that I do love. So let's see. Jump in. Steve from Georgia Stan says, that would be awesome, Bob. However, if you need a day off, I'm sure everyone would understand. No Thanksgiving dinner here either. Mom's bonkers and the rest of my family are right-wing tools, and I have no desire to spend any time with them whatsoever. And that without me saying it in quite such bare terms is kind of what I've got in mind. This will be... Yeah, you know, Gertrude Stein famously said, friends are the family you make for yourself. And maybe what we need, as Agnes just mentioned to me, is a virtual Thanksgiving dinner with our family. And so let me extend that offer to you. Maybe we'll do Thanksgiving on the front porch. Would you like that? Because I'm kind of liking that. Steve in New York says, I'm a vote no on the horn being on. Bob, you need a rest. We all need a rest. We need to preserve as much brain power as we can for the long haul. It's not a fine, the brain power thing is not a finite resource for me. At least not for the time being. And I know, I know what Thanksgiving Day is going to be. With or without the broadcast. I mean, it's Thursday. For me. No, they're not going to change her schedule at a moment's notice, Randy. We're talking about Hellmart here, okay? Ralps says, I would love it if you had a Thanksgiving Day program. I'll be at a family gathering in the afternoon, maybe, or early evening. Also, I'm offering a $25 challenge, so okay. We now have $140 worth of challenge on the table. And it would be great if we did not let that just slide by. I mean, it can be 5, it could be 10. Yeah, it can also be 140 or 200. Or, Mr. Soros, I mean, if paying all those protesters didn't put too much of a dent in your wallet, you know, $1 million. I mean, we'll probably do more good with that $1 million, George, than Hillary did with, I'm just saying. Mark in Florida says, I hope we're lucky enough to hear you on Thanksgiving Day. Ah, and taking the thanks off of it, Luda says, Giving Day. I'll be around on Kick a Pilgrim Day, Bob. My community doesn't exactly celebrate this holiday. It's up to you, though. I get that. And maybe we begin to take steps toward, and, you know, be a good time to talk about the history of the real pilgrims. You know, look, they would have loved Donald Trump. I mean, except for the adultery, the marrying a stripper part, the stripping part. The nudity part, the fornication part, authoritarians, yeah, boy, sure. Kim in New York says Thanksgiving for me is generally going to suck as it's the first one without my husband Matthew. So it would be nice to, it would be a salve to hear you that night, Bob. You may have just pushed, you may have just provided the deciding vote, Kim. John says, my vote is for a show. My family doesn't celebrate Thanksgiving anyway. If you want the day off, great. If you want to broadcast, better. If you want to do a front porch, even better. David in South Carolina, Stan, says, my first Thanksgiving without my late wife and mom and Candace. Can't get down from school, so it would be great. Okay. Now, y'all all have to show up, okay? Don't RSVP the party, and then no. Everybody has to show up. Frank says, any idea why it's a story on CNN that Trump wants all his kids to have top secret security clearance? That idea gives me a queasy feeling. That idea makes my liver quiver, Frank. I guess they're just going to, I don't know, they're going to share the labor. And, you know, you probably want everybody to have a top secret security clearance so that instead of having to have any future elections, he can just hand the power on down to maybe the eldest of his anus-mouthed young male children, and it can eventually wind up with what's bare ass or what's the kid's name, 40 years from now. But yeah, that gives me chills. But you know, Barron's gonna need a top secret security clearance, because remember, Post told us that his kid could solve all of our cybersecurity issues because, and I quote, he has a computer. Lord, I wish I'd made that up. But of course, I didn't. And we haven't even gotten into the swamp yet. We're gonna. But we haven't. Lord God. So, let's take a break. Let's take a break and give everybody a chance to run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the contribute button, and help move us forward toward that lovely, lovely day when this becomes the headquarters of the resistance, so that this radio network can be here when we have to form up a resistance. Note coming in from Scott and Punky. Blame game seems to be kicking into high gear. From Time Magazine, and the 2016 Ralph Nader Award goes to Bernie Sanders. Hey, Sanders distracted Hillary Clinton from creating a unified vision for the future. I didn't know he even had his distraction ray with him. On Election Day, Senator Bernie Sanders earned the 2016 Ralph Nader Award for the leftist most responsible for helping Republicans win the presidency. True, Donald Trump cleverly exploited voters' frustrations, and Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016 was as rigid and empty as it was when she lost in 2008. To a black guy whose middle name was Hussein, I might add. Let us not forget that she really should not have run in 2016 because she could not even win in the primaries against a black guy whose middle name was Hussein. Still, Sanders helped Clinton lose. His insurgency pushed her too far left to prevent an effective recentering in the fall, while goading her into wooing different constituencies rather than uniting the nation. Oh! Suck my tailpipe! Really, Time Magazine? Well, of course. I mean, you know who you are. Too far left. Because, you know, after all, Post, he was just right there in the center all along. That's why late in the campaign he made his campaign chief racist Bannon. Darcy with a question. Why is MSNBC calling Trump the people's choice? The people's choice, I thought, was the popular vote. Well, that kind of is true. I mean, just so we all understand it. He's the electoral. Well, it's kind of like yesterday when the Trump voter from Mississippi told me that he won in a landslide, because you know he didn't. He got the votes of 18.9% of the population of this country. Mo Liberal with a note. Evening, Bob. If you go live from the porch on Turkey Day, I'll cover half a show for you, brother. We appreciate all you do for us. Well, thank you. Thank you. That's really kind. So I think it's decided there will be a program on Thursday, a week from this Thursday. Well, let's keep on with the fun here with Time Magazine real quick. In fairness, Sanders ran a surprisingly effective campaign, tapping the same anti-establishment fury Donald Trump stirred. Oh, really? Sanders tapped it, but Trump stirred it. I mean, if you're going to work with a metaphor like that, shouldn't Sanders have shaken it, but Trump stirred it? Hey, oh, well. Although Sanders and Trump are very different, their campaigns were not. Each treated Hillary Clinton as a compromised Wall Street-worshipping establishment sellout, which, incidentally, well, that's kind of pointless now, isn't it? Both demonized Washington insiders and free trade rather than tackling the real structural problem. The United States deindustrialized because Americans refused to pay what it costs to hire American workers and instead buy cheaper imported products. Objection lacks a foundation. Because, see, Americans used to pay what it cost to buy American goods all the time. I mean, I remember, and I don't know why this popped into my head. You don't want to live inside my skull. I remember advertisements once upon a time for Curtis Mathis televisions. And the ad for it said, the only television made entirely in the United States. I think they were probably fudging a little bit on that because the circuit boards and stuff and the transistors, they probably came from Asia. But nonetheless, and, you know, they were a going concern for quite some time, and they made a good television set. I remember when our magnificent new mall opened in the late 70s in Northwest Alabama. There was a shoe store there, and I had dress shoes from there called Hanover. And they made beautiful shoes, leather soles, you know, nice. And they were reasonably affordable. And every last pair of shoes was made in the United States by, you know, little American shoemaker elves. No, they were made by families, working union families, who succeeded alongside of us. So, you know, Time Magazine can take this assertion that Americans won't pay what it costs to hire American workers, and then stick it up their ass sideways, because there's no proof of that. The only reason we started buying cheap crap from overseas is because cheap crap from overseas began to be all we could get. And then there's the politics problem. It has been said that if you want to buy an American pair of, like, athletic shoes, that you can, if you look really carefully, you can buy a pair of New Balance shoes that are actually made in the United States. That's information that's probably a few years old, but I remember that being said. But hey, guess who openly, broadly, and financially supported Post? Ha! New Balance! No New Balance shoes will be coming into this household. As a result, just as Ralph Nader siphoned tens of thousands of votes on Election Day 2000 in Florida from Al Gore, causing the deadlock and George W. Bush's victory. But no, eat me, Time Magazine. George Bush filing a lawsuit to stop the counting of votes is what led to George W. Bush's victory. I mean, suck it, Time. Bernie Sanders, similar vampire effect. Really? Really, vampires? Really? Yes. Enfeebled Hillary Clinton. No, goddammit. Hillary Clinton enfeebled Hillary Clinton. Jesus criminy. And, you know, while we're at it, no, I'm not going to go down the Nader road either. Because the fact of the matter is, New Hampshire,
could have done it for Gore. West Virginia could have done it for Gore. His home state of Tennessee could have done it for Gore. And I will believe till the end of my days that had Gore not lost his goddamn mind
and nominated Droopy from Connecticut as his running mate,
we might have beat Dim Leader. Time also neglects to mention the Republican staffer riot in Dade County. Yeah, well. This dynamic followed a classic historical pattern. Sanders drew Clinton from the center toward the Democrats' extreme flank. That shift paralleled Jimmy Carter's leftward lurch when Ted Kennedy ran in 1980.
Ha, how cute. They're comparing Hillary to an incumbent president.
And George H.W. Bush's right-wing swerve when Pat Buchanan rebelled in 1992.
Who's
the goddamn Solon who wrote that shit? This thing goes on forever. And it's got about as much relevance as, well, you know. So, seriously, there is $140 worth of challenge left on the table for this Moran Monday, the 27th, the 14th day of November at 27 minutes past the hour. We'll take a break and come back to your calls. The Skype slash other line is occupied at the moment, but the stress line is free. So jump right in if you want to get in on the conversation. 304-663-4676. I'm just taking a break, and I'm going to share a little music with you. I doubt if you have heard this anywhere else yet. The name of the band is the Rubilators. Our own dear friend, Lee Potter, the one and only, is on drums. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't either way. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. I can do anything.
We're gonna keep out all of the Muslims, cause they don't worship like my mama do. We're gonna kick out all of those Mexicans, cause they taking jobs from me and you. Drag her back to where she belongs. Grab this country by the pussy. This is our new freedom song. We're gonna bring back the victories, coal mines and the factories. Boy, we're gonna be so strong. Bring back attitude. Ain't right. Come on, everybody, you know what we can do with our favorite book by our side. We gotta grab this country by the pussy, drag her back to where she belongs. Grab this country by the pussy. This is our new freedom song. Yeah, grab this country by the pussy. Grab this country by the pussy. I say grab this country by the...
I only have one misgiving about that song. It's obviously protest, it's parody. But I can almost hear them playing it down there
You know, down there at racist Bannon's little clavern, and that is not necessarily inspiring. But that is, you can find it on YouTube. Grab This Country by the Rubilators, Rubilators, the Rubilators. Michael with a note says, subject line, Droopy versus Kane. While we're on the subject of Droopy, you think if Hillary had picked literally anyone other than Tim Kaine, it might have helped? Like, gee gosh, oh, I don't know, Bernie? Just wondering. I know we talked about it at the time of the disappointing Kaine announcement. What do you think now? I think it's the only thing that could have saved her. But it would have saved her in spite of herself if it, in fact, did. Because I will not come away from the notion that she had no business being the nominee in the first place. No. She was a retread. She had already proven her propensity for losing. The statistics were all out there. Her poll numbers never went up. They always only went down. And there you go. Scott and Punky are upset with me. Subject line, giving up already? To hear you tell it in today's filibobster, the game is already over. Less than a week after the election, you seem to be concluding that the Dems in the House and Senate have already thrown in the towel and will be nothing more than Trump's minions and handmaidens merely doing his bidding over the next 4 years. Wait and see, Scott. Just watch. They might, but only if their constituents remain silent or otherwise engage themselves in activities that do everything except let their representative or senators know exactly what they're expected of them in the months and years ahead. No, make no mistake, there will be marching, and if I can get there, I'll go and march. I don't have a lot of disposable income for getting on the road and going to things like that, but where I can participate, I by God will, because I by God always have. And I'm sure others will sacrifice to do the same thing. Now, will they respond in sufficient numbers? See, that's the problem, Scott. Every Democrat in the House can vote against what the Republicans choose to do. In the House of Representatives, Scott, that does not matter. Now, if chinless Mitch McConnell lets the filibuster remain in place, there's a little bit of room to work, but not a lot. And if chinless Mitch decides to get rid of the filibuster, then game over. And besides, let's do remember that there are always people like Joe Manchin out there to put the shiv to his Democratic brethren and sistren, and he's probably better than that than anything else he does. Now, you can say I'm throwing in the towel. I'm not throwing in the towel, but I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat. I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat a turd and tell you that it's a goddamn truffle. It's not. There are bad, hard times coming. And they're coming for and they're coming for people who absolutely have a right to be afraid. I read an article today by Amanda Marcotte who says, "Well, don't worry, married gay people. They can't touch your gay marriage. It's beyond their reach." I hope to hell she's right. But I also hope that the gay community doesn't look at that and go, ho-hum, okay, well, bored now. And step back because frankly, if anyone has proven themselves successful in the last 20 years at achieving social change, it is the gay community. And even if marriage is safe for now, with one seat to be filled on the Supreme Court, it may not be forever. And Amanda Marcotte, in her article at Salon, makes certain assumptions that I don't necessarily think are safe. She seems to think that the court would have to screw all marriages to screw over gay marriages. No, they can just say, we over, if you get the right case through the door, and that is, you know, I mean, that's for real. You got to get the right case through the door, but they'll find it. They'll find it. All the Republican Party has to do is drag a $100 bill through a trailer park somewhere, and they'll find some aggrieved goddamn Confederate that they'll take all the way to the Supreme Court. And then once it, you know, all we got to do is replace maybe Anthony Kennedy right there. Or how about Anthony Kennedy and notorious RGB or RBG? Boom. Goodbye, gay marriage. It's not as locked up and safe as one might think. Scott, you know, trying to be an optimist, and I appreciate that, says, I'm not willing to resign myself to a dark, futile future. This is something I have less than no discernible interest in. I also do not plan to sit quietly by and merely be a disenfranchised member of the Pepsi generation. I'll do what I can to create a future that works for us all. Here are two notions that some may find helpful as we work our way through all this. Life is a game. In order to have a game, something has to be more important than something else. If what already is more important than what isn't, the game is over. So life is a game in which what isn't is more important than what is. Create your future from your future, not your past. I mean, you know, if you know, like John Lennon said, whatever gets you through the night. But then again, I live in a very different place. I mean, they're already talking about secession out in California. And I wouldn't blame them if they did, as much as I despise the notion of secession. But I also don't think they're going to. Carol Baker notes, Pam Bondi, bribed to kill a Trump probe, is on his transition team. You're stiffed if you work for him, rewarded if you're corrupt for him. Trump's team amazed. They must replace all West Wing staffers. Run the country like a business? Fuck, they can't even run it like a civics class. Well, there's that. Hey, let's go over to South Carolina, Stan, and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Oh, you don't want to talk to me.
Well, apparently I do.
Listen, insert Goebbels for Bannon.
Yeah, racist, you know, Bannon, absolutely.
You know, I've been talking to people. People don't have an idea. A lot of people don't have a clue. And, you know, all I can say, one of the few things I want to say, you know, I've gotten involved in local politics now because before this bullshit started, I could see it coming and I had to get started. So we have to do, you know, like the Tea Party did, we got to start from the ground up. These people had the state houses, they got state governments. You know, that's what we have to do because that's the only way. We have to take back the Senate. We have to take back the House. And, you know, you can't wait until the last minute. You just can't wait because, you know, the cards are stacked against us. The only thing that's in our favor is nature does not like total imbalance. It really doesn't. And I think these folks are going to overstep because they're going to get too cocky at some point.
Okay, I mean, I'm willing to go down that path with you, Todd. But what happens when they overstep? Who's going to stop them? I'm not being a jerk here. I'm not trying to be. Over the past few nights, Scott and I have had a bit of a disagreement about all this. But I just don't have any Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm in me right now.
No, I heard Scott Friday. I was listening to Scott very closely. And by the way, Scott, when I said Son of the South, I was talking about the writer. I was not talking about the vice president. Should have been elect or, you know, the pussy dude, whatever. I wasn't talking about him. I was talking about, the southern writer. Anyway, All right. That's what's going to happen. This is just ridiculous. Steve Bannon? Are you fucking serious? See, this is already, you know, this is why people are raging in the streets. The young people know. They're like, oh no, they didn't get out to vote, but see, and I know you're into predicting elections and predicting things now. You know.
No, I mean, I did better than the geniuses did.
You did, and so did I, and I appreciate you recognizing what, you know, that was a while ago. I remember that, you know, I do remember that. And that was it, because Philadelphia, if you can't win Philadelphia, that's it, you're done, as a Democrat. And you know, this is what I don't get. And it's not like I do have a little bit of history, and I did make my living doing subject research and statistics and things like that, and interviewing people, but you know, they, at some point, you got to use common sense. You know, you have to use common sense at some point. That's why I was just like, no, this, you know, Nate's off. You know, we had to respect him, but Nate was off. Everybody was off. They missed it. I don't know how they missed it, but they missed it. But this is the thing. We have to mobilize now. We have to start now. You know, not yesterday, now. And we have to come with facts. Just like our wages have been flat, working people, regular people, the very people that have voted for this guy. See, in other words, they don't even understand. It's not about the it is about the president, but it's not. Now it is about the president, because look at who he's appointing. Look at the ghouls he is going to have around him. Now, you brought up Curtis Mathis, right? There's a Curtis Mathis TV running next door to me, right? The neighbor has one, still running.
Whoa.
And they... Yeah, they were good TVs. I had relatives in Florida who still have Curtis Mathis TVs. They were very good TVs. They always bought Curtis Mathis. And I'd never seen him before. I had never seen him before. You know, I was like a teenager and I would, you know, come down here to visit. And I was like, Curtis Mathis, what is that? And they were like, it's made in the USA. But remember, Walmart, when the old guy was still around, That was the Republican place to go because they buy American. Remember, the Republicans are all about buy American. Remember that? Remember?
Oh, they were very
about
much.
Buy American. Till the kids took over and they bought all that quick, cheap stuff from China. So we, you know, we can do this, but we have to educate people. We have to educate people. You know, but see, these people are they're angry at the wrong folks. And this is the time to get them energized. I mean, it's hard to influence people, but if they see our energy, maybe they'll catch on. Because it wasn't a president. It wasn't, I mean, it was Reagan, but it wasn't. It's the Congress. Because they're the ones who do the legislation. The president signs off on these bills. So why in the hell do we have and still do laws that subsidize corporations from moving offshore? I mean, lock, stock, and barrel. Now, don't like using cliches, but if you want to be a good writer, you're not supposed to do that. However, they will subsidize everything. I mean, that when you go walk into a factory, those big machines that have the yellow lines around them, they can subsidize the people that come in and rip that shit out of the floor, which is a difficult task. Put that shit in a truck and put it on this container. And on one of those Maersk trucks, take it to the ship and ship it over to China. They get to write all that off. It wasn't a president. It was because of legislation that folks in Congress like your asshole did, probably. Right? Your fake Democrat did. Okay? So that's who we need to be. You know, that's what I'm saying. We have to get, it's not going to be overnight. But folks need to, we just have to just convince these people that they can continue to vote against the self-interest. And it's going to bite them in the ass. That's why quickly you saw Trump's affect change about the health care. Now, I'm not giving him a pass. Now, I'm not giving him a pass at all. But His whole face changed in a way. He was like, oh my God, this is a bigger job than I thought it was. Yeah, it is. Because, you know, you weren't really thinking. He was not thinking. You know, he's limited. You know, he can only do what he can do. But this Banyan thing, why do you think people are rioting in the streets? This is absolutely ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous, and people are pissed. Now, what do you think is the best thing that we can do now, right now?
Todd, right now, I mean, I'm here and I'm documenting what's going on in front of the inauguration. A lot of this country is acting like the Post is already president. He isn't. But the things that lead up to somebody becoming president, they're happening. I think we need a viable strategy. And I got a member of the Kumbaya Kazoo Chorus took me to task over the weekend saying, what? We're just supposed to be obstructionists and say no and stop everything just like the Republicans did? Is that who we are? Is that where we are? Well, let's take a look at that. The Republicans spent 8 years saying no to letting a black man be president, no matter what he wanted to do.
Yes.
Now, what we're saying no to is keeping people from having their Social Security stolen from them and put on the Wall Street roulette wheel. What we're saying no to is having 11 million people rounded up and put in camps. What we're saying no to is whatever war Post may want to wage in conjunction with his master in Moscow. Okay? We're saying no to taking away marriage dignity. We're saying no to taking away human dignity. We're saying no to poisoning communities with fracking and pipelines and mountaintop removal. To be fair, we've been saying no about that for a long time now, to a Democrat too. But everything we're saying no about is tied in with the essential ability of a whole lot of people to keep on being living human beings. We're saying no to the rise of a Trump police state. So is it the same kind of obstructionism that the Republicans engaged in? I don't think so, Todd.
But by the same token,
all of these things are tied up with mundane horseshit like budgets. Now, these bastards are going to own the government as of January 20th, and they are going to have to keep the government running, and I think the next time that clock ticks down to zero is in March. Now, do we collaborate? That's a question we have to answer. Do we help them pass a continuing resolution? Because these fuckers won't.
They want the CR.
I'm sorry?
They want CR. Because they don't want to have to deal with conflict right now.
Yeah.
I may be wrong, but I think they want CR. That's what I've been reading. That's what I've been hearing.
Well, they want it until they can get a budget together, and they've got one. They want it until they've got a budget together that has a whole wish list of right-wing wet dreams in it. So when they send a budget, when Paul Ryan gives that budget to the House that piratizes Social Security, that says that everybody who's getting it now will keep on getting it, but the rest of us can fuck off. That my generation's Medicare, your generation's Medicare, is going to be what's called premium supplement support, which means Paul Ryan will see to it that you get a check for $3.19 to help pay on a $2,000 insurance policy.
Right, like a mini block grant. That's it. Sorry, you know, we gave you a check.
Yep.
You know, I'm sorry. I can't control how you spend it. Oh, you bought a pack of cigarettes? Well, that's not my problem.
Freedom, baby, freedom. And when they get busy, because they They have to keep that promise to repeal Obamacare. And when they get busy on that, well, do we want the Democrats to get out their kazoos and play a stirring chorus of Kumbaya and get down to business collaborating on that? I'm not forgiving anybody who takes health care away from tens of millions of Americans. I don't care if they're a Democrat or a Republican. I don't care if they're a goddamn anarcho-syndicalist. I ain't forgiving and I ain't tolerating. And so, yeah, I will be an activist. I reach out and make contact with congressional offices all the time, and I always try to make sure that I'm contacting the local office because they have to put up with you. D.C. can just go, screw you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, and there's a nice website. It's called contactthecongress.org, I believe it is. And it has a map. Even if you're not that proficient with who represents you, right? Because I think moving into the from the 214th or 215th Congress now, something like that. But anyway, and it has a state, and you blow it up, and you can hit the state that you live in. And it will show you who represents you, right? And if they're not in session, they will direct that call to where they're supposed to be at that time. And it does, you know, just like, I don't know, a couple of years ago, remember I told you I called my guy, right? The guy who represents me, you know, in the House of Representatives. He's like, well, you didn't vote for me. I'm like, what in the hell are you talking about? You know, doesn't matter if I didn't vote for you. You represent me. See, we can't let these people get that cocky. We have to let them know that we are not. This is when people have to speak up. It matters. I'm telling you, folks, it matters. They will respond. Even if it's not in a good way, guess what? That means they heard you. And if they hear one, they need to hear two. If they hear two, they need to hear eight. Because this is a wonderful forum, and we're all glad you're here. Everybody is glad you're here, and people need to hit the contribute button, and people need to send money to Eisenhower Boulevard and to the UPS store, where the Klan resides. Well, you know, because we need to send money so that Boss Man Lee can have bigger bats when he goes in there to get the mail. You know. And I'm being, you know, slightly facetious with that. But, I mean, come on.
Yeah, better rebar. Better rebar for Boss Man Wayne.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, I gotta share something with you. It's not necessarily happy stuff. Ron in Raleigh just sent me a note, and he said, as I recall some time ago, Todd mentioned that he knew Phil Freeland, the designer of the African American Museum on the Mall in D.C. I found out today, to my great sadness, Phil has been diagnosed with ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. I don't know if Todd's had any recent contact with Phil, but I'm sure he'd like to know.
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I didn't mention that part. Yes, he's deteriorating. He wasn't telling anybody. That's why you saw everyone, like when it was on C-SPAN. Thank you. Thank you, Ron. Yes, yeah, absolutely. That's his whole family. And, you know, they come from rich in terms of culture. Like their great-grandfather was an artist who traveled to France and, I mean, the Freelons were, you know, they're just a wonderful family. And see, we're losing folks. And you know what? I'm glad Ron brought that up because I don't know if you remember a few weeks ago. It must have had to be on a Friday because I remember Louisiana, the guy from Louisiana, Jim, whose great father was in, you know, dealing with the Kennedy stuff. We were talking about the race riots in Tulsa. And then I brought up, you know, how a president sets a tone. You know, how these lynchings started right at, you know, with Wilson. And how long did it take? Like 10 minutes? It took like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, this stuff is just starting. So, folks, we can't let these people think that they run shit. Fuck that. They don't run shit. Like you described it. This is the silent majority that just got over this time. But, you know, some people saw it coming only because of the way the system is set up. Right? That's just the way the system is set up, and it's a terrible thing. We have to get rid of this.
You mentioned Jim's daddy a minute ago, Todd. I'm going to throw something out there, something that just popped into my head. And, you know, I hope I don't get a visit from those humorless people with the thin ties that talk to their wrists or anything, because I'm not saying anything. But, you know, Jim's dad had put forward the theory, and some of it is borne out in the JFK movie. Others are borne out in On the Trail of the Assassins, Jim's dad's book. But he essentially said that Kennedy was taken down from the inside. That he was taken down by elements of our own government.
Okay.
And I was watching just because I need my giggles where I can get them, and I fired up that Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, clip where he's talking about visiting the Assassination Museum at the Book Depository in Dallas. You know, the clip where he says, and it's very, very accurate because Oswald's not there.
Right.
And that's the one that contains the line about where he says maybe Oswald could have made the shot if pigeons had flown him, grabbed him by the clothing and the hair and flown him out over the street, but somebody would have noticed. He said, then again, groups of anti-Castro pigeons were seen drinking in bars saying, coo, coo. I just laugh myself silly every time I see that. But there's a part, he gets to a part where he says, every new president goes into a darkened room and the CIA shows him a movie of the Kennedy assassination. And after a few seconds, the new president looks up and goes, that's not the Zapruder film. And the CIA guys go, right you are. And the president says, where do I sign? Well, that's funny in a grim sort of way. But I got to thinking about the idea that, or the theory that Kennedy was taken down from elements inside our own government. And something occurred to me, Todd.
What?
Never before in my life have I hoped that that's true.
I know you didn't just say that.
I did just say it.
Wow. That's deep. I mean, it's probably true what you said, but
I'm going to say that. Because this isn't ancient Rome. The Secret Service is not the Praetorian cohort. An out-of-control president is supposed to be checked by the threat of impeachment. But there's no threat of impeachment from this House. This House of Representatives would no sooner attend to its constitutional duties to impeach an out-of-control president committing high crimes and misdemeanors than it would than it would step on its own collective dick. Because no matter what Post does, they're going to love it. Because they're going to have the bit in their teeth, and they're going to be foaming at their rabid mouths, getting everything they ever dreamed of. How long till we get a flag burning amendment to the Constitution? And you know what?
Yeah.
If they pass that, and I expect that, you know, they'll find time for that. If they pass that, it's real. It's in the Constitution. The First Amendment has no impact on, you know, no by God flag burning.
See, there's so much negative that's going to... Yeah, I'm getting into my prognostication mode, and only because I say this out of my life experience. And you know, that come on, man, survey research. I spent most of my life doing survey research and working with staff, interviewing people. That's why I said what I said before. You know, just like right now, tomorrow in school, there'll be some kid in junior high saying, I'm going to grab this girl by her pussy, and I'm going to tell her to her face.
It's already happened.
Oh, I didn't know that. See?
Yeah, that happened last week.
Okay.
Yeah, a little girl getting grabbed by the vagina in school is so last week, Todd.
Didn't, you know,
and the little boy saying, "If Trump can do it, I can too." That's so last week.
See, I had to turn.
But no, it's okay because Post has said, "I'll look in the camera and say stop it if it will help." Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
So I'm going back to what you brought up. Exactly. See, there is a dark government. There is a force that bureaucrats really, they run the country, really. Like, you get out of line, I'm sorry, you got to go. And that's what happened to Kennedy. Because
a middle school teacher in California just got caught telling her students that their children should, telling her students that their parents should be deported.
Yeah, see, we can't have, that's too much.
And then there's what happened here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, over the last few days. You know, when you handle government grants, Todd, every time you parse out money, you have to sign off on a non-discrimination statement. Well, the head of the Clay County, West Virginia Community Development Corporation, who handles things like, you know, passing out federal grant dollars, posted on Facebook, and I'm not kidding, get the hockey puck. I want to make sure that I've got the actual real live no kidding quote. She posted on Facebook, It will be refreshing to have a classy, beautiful, dignified First Lady in the White House. I'm tired of seeing an ape in heels.
What?
And then the mayor of Clay, West Virginia, Beverly Whaling, responded to her saying, "You just made my day, Pam."
Okay.
Now, I don't believe in slut shaming or anything like that. But it is a fact that we are now going to have the second foreign-born First Lady of the United States and the first First Lady of the United States ever to remove her clothing for public display by after having been paid to do so by some guy. That's a fact.
Listen, I don't know if this will survive... This guy, and I'm so glad you made that segue into the Skinny Tie Brigade, because that's, you know, the bureaucrats, those folks are in there. That's what they do, right? The deep state, they're part of the deep, you know, that's the top of the iceberg of the deep state. They're in there no matter what administration comes in. But that's what makes us run smoothly as a country. We don't tilt, you know, our needle doesn't go too far to the right, too far to the left, most of the time in the modern era, you know.
It just stays vaguely over to the right of center,
right? Which is why we have to really focus on the Senate and the House. But I don't want to get off on a tangent, as I often do. There's a lot of evidence that this First Lady, see Trump, referenced David K. Johnson. Trump, because of his proclivity for liking young women and having his way with them and whatnot, you know, he bought into this modeling agency as a sham, which was really like what they call white slavery, which means, you know, basically you get these women from poor Eastern European countries, and then you get them over here, and you take all their documents.
Well, melanoma worked when she first got here. Melanoma worked here in violation of the laws of the United States.
Absolutely, and she was an escort. You know, she was basically a high price hooker.
I'm not prepared to go that far. I don't have data for that. But I do. But there is undeniable data that she, in exchange for money, removed her clothing so some guy could take pictures of her.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, absolutely. That's out.
And part of the picture taking included, and I don't know how Mike Pence feels about this, simulated lesbian action. And then there was the one where she was in sort of beige-ish white clothing, kind of leaning away like she's fearful of a woman done up all in black and leather with a riding crop.
You know, I'm gonna prove, but just don't set yourself up like you're not above that. You know what I mean? That's what I'm getting at. That you know, don't. And this is what, you know, this is what, I mean, bristles me. I'm telling you, it bristles me to last minute, is that when these folks always say, some people, oh, Obama, he's been the most racially divisive president ever.
Oh, hell, I got called a race baiter over the weekend because I pointed out, because I presented the story of that poor, poor woman in Clay County who obviously is suffering from terrible economic anxiety. You know, her economic anxiety was so bad that it made her call Michelle Obama an ape in heels.
See, it's hard for me to get beyond that. You know, I mean, people have to be honest with themselves.
Well, it gets funnerer because now that millions of people know about what a filthy bigot she is, Pam Taylor, director of the Clay County Development Corporation, has said that a hate crime is being perpetrated against her because people are talking about her, talking about how the First Lady is an ape in high heels. That's a hate crime against her, you know, because economic anxiety.
Well, it's the poor, downtrodden white folks, man. I'm so sorry.
Man, I wish the man would get his boot off of her precious white Christian neck over there where it says only God, where she's got only God can judge me tattooed on her white Christian neck.
You know what? I have to go out. I'm in South Carolina, let me go out and pick cotton under this weird moonlight we're having now, since the moon is so close to the earth and we're apparently, I'm in the best path. If you're a Wiccan, this is the place to be, blah, blah, blah. So let me go out and pick some cotton so that I can placate these motherfuckers, man, because this city feel better, because they have been just so downtrodden. You know, ever since the slaves got free, it's just, they had to work and they had to get blisters, man. It's just not right. It just is not right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Okay.
Well, Todd, it's been a joy. It always is a joy talking to you. You have a good evening and, you know, hang on tight. And I realize you're a stranger in a strange land down there in South Carolina, Stan. But do me a favor with the game with Clemson and South Carolina coming up. Just holler out "Go Cox" every once in a while, would you?
Oh, we do that. Oh yeah, I'm on that. That's where you know it, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Because one last thing, David down in South Carolina, Stan, in case you're wondering. The Clemson faithful are now using the hashtag rigged, saying that the referee rigged the game to make Pitt win.
See, that's why we don't do Clemson. It didn't take me but like 2 months to figure out who's who and what's what. It's interesting who roots for Clemson and who roots for the Gamecocks. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, what do you want for a university on the grounds of an old slave plantation, huh?
There you go.
There you go. All right. As long as you got that, Todd, we're good, man.
Barbecue, man. Barbecue.
It's coming. Barbecue is coming to the USA. Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you later, Todd. Bye now.
Okay. Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Hit the contribute button.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I have to say this. No, let me say this.
Yeah.
Say this. And listen, people, I don't know who's listening, and you know, if you're a first-time listener, you may not. Listen, I'm serious about this. Bob Kincaid is doing an excellent job, and I forgot to tell him on Thursday. And you can listen to his podcast because he has everything archived. Last Thursday, he was on fire on his filibuster. Bob Kincaid was on fire. But Bob Kincaid, I don't want to say it detracts from this show, only in his mind it might, but he really does not like asking for contributions. He would rather just have a free-flowing show. That's just the way Bob likes to do things. And I don't blame him. It's just not conducive to the way the programming goes. And most people have a debit card or a credit card, and it's easy to go to the website. And I do not have the snail mail address in front of me. But if you go to the website, Head On Radio, just Google Head On Radio, and you can't miss it because you can't miss it. Head On Radio and contribute. And
yeah, headonradionetwork.com.
Just do it. That's it.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you. Thank you very kindly.
Oh, all right.
All right. Bye now. That's our buddy Todd. We'll keep things rolling, but I've got good news. Thanks to Angelica, and thanks to Joan. And I want to make sure that I get the thank yous in. And let's see, I mentioned Steve, Karen, and Cletus a little bit ago. And thanks very kindly to Mitchell. We have $23 to go to meet both of the matching challenges that are on the table. From Mike in Cascadia at $125 and $25 from Ralph's. Thank you very kindly. $23 to go to meet those two matching challenges. And that is huge. So hopefully that will happen. Let's go over and check in with Will in Chicago. Hey, Will.
I would say good evening, except that I don't really feel that it's a good evening. I was raised to be an honest man. I'm not saying the situation is dire with the incoming president-elect, but when you hope that the man's sheer incompetence and lack of knowledge on such basic facts that wait, we have to rehire the entire staff except for the gardeners and maybe the cooks. When you're hoping that level of incompetence slows him down, you are in dire shape. Meanwhile, the hate is continuing. I see that a synagogue in Missoula, Montana, asked for a police patrol after American Nazi Party flyers accusing Jews of controlling the media were dropped off in residential parts of the town. And now we have Steve Bannon, who, as I'd like to say, part of me is actually glad he looks ill, because I fear his best contribution to Earth will be to decay back into it.
Well, now, Newt Gingrich has said that you're just a nutter for thinking that Steve Bannon is an anti-Semite.
Excuse me. If it walks like a duck and moves like a duck and quacks like a duck, there's a very high probability that it is a duck. Also, for Newt Gingrich, let us remember this man in Eternity's Dictionary may have his picture next to the word hypocrite, because this is a man who is on his third marriage after holding himself up as a beacon of virtue during the Clinton years while he was cheating on one of his wives. course, the first one he left fighting cancer.
Yeah, she was in a hospital bed fighting cancer when he dropped the divorce papers on her. But see, of course, that's the way Christianity works. Will, he's not perfect, just forgiven.
Ah, well, I'm not a Christian. I have a higher standard. If you profess values, you should at least make an effort to live with them.
I agree wholeheartedly. And you know, I love this explanation that has been given, that racist Bannon. Are you an old Johnny Quest fan? I mean, is that joke resonating with anybody, racist Bannon?
Yes.
Okay.
Yet you have to remember, WGN-TV kept on rerunning old programs well into the 80s, so the joke is, I actually remember the Lone Ranger and the Cisco Kid because they kept on showing them.
Oh, dear God, not the Cisco Kid.
Yes.
So the argument has been made, Will, that racist Bannon is not an anti-Semite because he worked with Jews in Hollywood.
Guess what? People will work anywhere, and if the man is also an opportunist, he is perhaps more than willing to suspend his heat publicly to help him advance. I trust him no more than I would trust a piranha not to eat a cow that has been dipped into the Amazon.
So I went a different tack.
Let me apologize to piranhas. Because piranhas are at least part of a vital ecosystem.
I went the simple route. When I read that racist Bannon can't possibly be an anti-Semite because he worked in Hollywood, my first thought was, well, yeah, so does Mel Gibson.
Yes, and I'd like to say Mel Gibson will probably never even rise to a fifth of what he was before, because quite frankly, in addition to being anti-Semite, that arrest also showed him to be sexist as he grabbed a female officer's boobs, perhaps heralding the future President Trump, who was sadly predicted by The Simpsons. If I may use a line a friend used in a novel he wrote that never got published, we have taken that one step beyond the outer limits of the Twilight Zone, and we're still in pursuit of the White Rabbit. It's going to be rough, but the thing we have to remember is to have courage. I think it will take courage for Democrats to not cooperate with Trump's agenda. I'm trying to think of anything significant that Democrats can cooperate with the Trumpsters on, possibly a continuing budgetary resolution. But beyond that, I can't think of anything. It's going to have to be.
Well, let's pursue that for a minute, Will. So when they need to pass a continuing resolution, you know, to keep the government open, should the Democrats participate in that, or should they simply say, "Hey, you've got the votes, you do it"?
I would say hold off on doing it unless it's a question of how much suffering Democrats can see happen. The problem is the Trump administration has no qualms about pretty much anything. So it's going to be rough. What I'm hoping is that we will see Bernie Sanders successful in getting Keith Ellison in, because if the Democrats were a party in any other nation whose politics I follow, and I try to have some familiarity with many different countries, the leadership would have been sacked by now, or be in the process of being sacked. In the case of some countries like Israel, where the party fails badly, very often the party disappears and a new one emerges. But it's going to be very, very tough, and I'm hoping to get a job soon, because I don't know if my health care coverage will continue. It's nothing. I mean, I don't have any serious problems, a little hypertension, but guess what? When you have to ask yourself, like, well, may his memory be for a blessing, Leonard Cohen did when he sung from the Jewish liturgy, who by fire, who will live and who will die, you know, things are bad, but the key thing is not giving up, and we need more progressive outlets. I presume you've heard of what's happened to 92.1, the Mike in Madison.
Gone.
Gone. Christmas music. No idea about its future. Can you don't know how glad I am that WCPT in Chicago is independently owned, and simply because it is not part of the six companies that control 90% of our media. And this is why outlets such as the Horn truly matter. So if anyone within the sound of my voice feels so moved to contribute, do so. And if you can afford to be a subscriber, do so. But that should only be part of what we do. We need, as Bernie Sanders said a while back, to have people get active in school boards, city councils, county commissions, state legislators, and governorships, because it's going to take a while to turn things around. I have hopes in the long run. In fact, if Mr. Trump does not deliver on all of his promises, and he's already stepped back a bit, lobbyist anyone, he may find that his followers become severely disappointed, in which case he may pay a political price. But I mean, this is a level of incompetence that I feel may best be compared to the corruption of the Ulysses S. Grant administration.
Well, I got some breaking news for you, Will.
Yeah.
The Associated Press is reporting that Rudy Giuliani has the inside track to be Secretary of State.
I thought it was going to be Newt Gingrich and Giuliani as Attorney General. But either one, how would I say it, there are probably house pets in my neighborhood which could probably do a better job than Giuliani. At the very least, their owners could. So, I mean, Giuliani...
I think Giuliani would have been Attorney General, but he kind of screwed things up by talking about how he manipulated Comey.
Yep. And that... So he can be pushed aside. I'm sure they'll find someone with a similar...
Well, Christie's toast. Pam Bondi.
Yeah.
Pam Bondi.
Pam Bondi. Yeah, Pam Bondi will do, unless she's somehow gets investigated. It's just that there's going to be so many conflicts of interest and trouble that we don't know where it ends, and we still have lawsuits, civil suits going on against Trump himself, so that's going to be interesting. In fact, I heard that the professor who has predicted a lot of election wins and predicted Trump's wins also has predicted that his conflicts of interest with his business are so great that it'll be impeaching. My thoughts said, well, not with this current Congress. Maybe in 2019, if a new Congress steps in and the Republicans don't have power. But to be blunt, we are in for hard times, and we have to stick together, be strong, and be kind to one another. I am my brother's keeper. That's something that perhaps some people have forgotten. But I am my brother's keeper. I am my sister's keeper. I'm the keeper of the rights, not just for my own faith and group, but for every other group and every other person in this country and in this world. We have to have the courage to take a stand, because if we don't, who will? And perhaps our example will inspire others. I know that it does seem dark, it does seem like winter is closing in, but if you give up, you can't, you've already lost. And I have a rule. If you have breath in your body, do not give up. When you cease to have breath, you are allowed to give up.
I've taken a little bit of pushback on my call for overt resistance and my call for no collaboration, and somehow or another that's been equated with giving up. I am by no means giving up. Resisting is an active undertaking.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I will do something that I thought I would never do. I have to praise Rahm Emanuel and several other big city mayors for having the courage to say that they will keep their cities as sanctuary cities. It's going to take courage, and honestly, I'm surprised that Mayor Emanuel has this courage. But perhaps someone had a talk to him and told him that if you have to take a stand, this is it in hell. If someone whom I viewed only as useful as an attack dog who disparaged liberals can take a stand, why the hell can't we? If someone I don't even like can take a stand, someone whose policies I've disagreed with can take a stand. All of us can. And I mean, it's also going to require a lot of work. And one form of resistance is going to be organizing and getting out the vote and educating voters, because I think Bernie Sanders could have connected a lot more with people in the states that Hillary Clinton lost than Secretary Clinton did, and I was always worried she was going to be a lackluster candidate.
That's where I get lost, and that's where I get in trouble. I mean, I've said my piece, Will, about why she should not have been the nominee. I said it when they made her the nominee. I did it. I mean, I still voted for her because I'm a political grown-up.
Right, same.
But she was a disaster waiting to happen.
But
there were people who were lost in chromosomal politics, and there were people who were, I guess, stood to benefit from it. And you know what? Her heart, I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt. Her heart was in the right place with women and families.
Yes,
and she would have tried to do right by all of those aggrieved, economically anxious people who spray paint swastikas on churches. She really would have. But the fact of the matter was, she was a wonk, okay?
Yes. She has enough charisma to make your average Vulcan seem like Gene Simmons at the height of his career.
She makes Spock look like George fucking Carlin, but, you know.
That would be interesting, a Vulcan George Carlin. We could probably use that right now.
Like I said, I spoke my piece. I voted for her. I didn't do it, you know, and I didn't go in and go, oh, fuck, you know. No, I voted for her, and I'm proud I voted for her. And you know what? As the days go by, I'm going to be even prouder that I voted for her.
Yes, as okay, well,
I mean, it just dawned on me. One of the reasons that the Trump team is demanding top secret clearances for all of his kids is that when the information when top secret information starts getting leaked to Trump's master in Russia, it'll be harder to track down who the spy is.
And guess what? There's no way those kids should be allowed because they are not advisors. There's already a conflict of interest in the businesses, and I'm sure a lot of that will show up, although I fear most of the mainstream media, with the exception of perhaps McClatchy and people with the integrity of Gren Eiffel, may your memory be for a blessing, will just try to normalize Trump and act like they did during the Bush build-up to the war in Iraq. There's nothing to see here. Ignore the man in the cut behind the curtain creating documents.
And what happens when Post hears his master's voice and we start collaborating in attacks on Aleppo?
That's the thing. We're going to have to find more courage in ourselves than I think we thought we had. We're going to have to find the courage that
this is about the loopiest thing I'll say all night. If I was somebody with a lot of stars on the shoulder boards of his costume in the Pentagon, whether that uniform be green or blue, I'd be thinking hard about whether or not I wanted to participate in this. I mean, you know, okay.
There's already been a few stories I've read in recent months where high-ranking officers have said anonymously that when Trump comes in, they're going to quit because they want to have no part of him because they view him as not only incompetent, but immoral.
Yeah, but see, that's the last thing that needs to happen, Will.
Yeah, because we need someone to restrain him. The problem is Trump fired generals who did act.
He'll have hire and fire, but the thing is, you know, that's the Turkey model, where Erdogan consolidates power by making sure that the highest echelons of the military are his, because the military traditionally in Turkey stood as a bulwark against autocratic and dictatorial rule. Now, we're supposed to have civilian rule of the military. I mean, there are question marks here that have question marks. And what do you do when Post's master in Moscow tells him to jump and he says froggy, and Post says how high, because Russia owns all of his goddamn debt? Okay. And then he tells the generals to do something.
Well, I believe it was Churchill who described the Soviet Union as a mystery wrapped in a riddle, wrapped in an enigma. And that's right, we have questions that we don't haven't even asked yet. So it's going to be a very long, hard, bumpy ride into the future. But
And as I saw someone ask recently, have you noticed that there haven't been any WikiLeaks revelations since Tuesday? Now how about that?
Well, you have to remember, Julian Assange, by his own admission, describes himself as a libertarian and said he thought that Trump would be better. So I have to treat, although WikiLeaks has in the past revealed useful information, let's face it, that this is not an unbiased source. It has its own bias, and ironically, in the long run, Assange is aligning himself with the elites he claims to despise.
Well, I mean, look, in a capitalist world, it's all about getting paid, isn't it?
Yep, money, mammoth. I mean, if Trump had the coins read what was truly in his heart, it would be in Mammon we trust. Once someone explained to him who Mammon is.
Yeah. And of course, the coins would be have to be designed to fit in his very tiny, tiny little hands.
Well, since we do need a laugh, there has been the popular chant, can't build a wall, hands too small. But we're going to be in for some difficult times, but we shouldn't lose hope. We need to have a community. And if anyone who has gotten angry with parts of the progressive community is listening, please remember we're ultimately on the same side. I'm trying to reach out to a few people, and my hope is that we will come together, set an example, and down the road we'll have victories, we'll have defeats, inevitably. But the key thing is to remember, if we are not true to who we are and do not have the courage to act, that is giving in. I intend to resist if there's any logical area where I can find where there's common ground, I suppose we can, but I mean, that to me is kind of like, hi, let's send out someone to deal with massive flooding in West Virginia, but then we'd also have to go back and say, you know, dumping tons upon tons of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and playing Russian roulette with the planet's ecosystem is generally a bad idea. So it's going to be interesting. We may have to pick and choose our battles. Our political leaders, who we respect, may have to do so, but perhaps Trump has indeed followed the PETA principle and risen to the level of his incompetence and will ultimately fail. The question is, do we have the courage to hold firm, be true to who we are, and be ready to pick up the pieces? Because there will be pieces, just that we don't know how many or how big or where. Let's have hope, let's have courage, and remember, if you can help your local progressive outlets such as The Horn, please do so, because they're becoming fewer and far between. We need each other now more than ever, and that is our strength as progressives, because we don't just believe in the power of the individual. We also believe in the power of the community. And with that, I'll gladly let someone else join in on the community conversation, which we need to keep going.
Thank you, Will. Thank you very kindly, and you have yourself a wonderful evening. Our buddy Will in Chicago. Let me check here. Yeah, both lines open if you want to participate in the conversation. Thanks going out to Nydia. Thank you, Nydia, very kindly. We have surpassed the two challenges on the table, both Mike and Cascadia's and Ralph's challenge, and working from what Tom in the Bay Area said, let's keep it going. Let's keep it going. Every dollar that comes in above the goal is a dollar we don't have to raise a day later. And we've got that whole dollar, day late, dollar short thing down to a science, by the way. You know, Gerald said something a little bit ago, and I understand this completely. He said, I don't know about you, but I'm tired. I worked my ass off trying to educate people. I don't have it in me. Not right now, anyway. Maybe in a few months. And that's, you know, that's what these months are about. We sit, we think, we talk, we organize amongst ourselves. And, you know, I took grief for this over the weekend. I don't know how you reach out to the Trumpansies. I don't know how you make common cause with somebody who thinks it's okay to spray paint swastikas on church walls. Or, you know, burn churches. All right? I don't know how you do that. You know, in Indiana, and I found this via our buddy Michael in Madison, in Indiana, an Episcopal church there, because, you know, the Episcopal church will offer Christian marriages to gay people. Some economically anxious people, because that's how we have to understand. They're just economically anxious. Well, they spray painted a swastika on the church, and they spray painted fag church on the church. But you know, it's okay, because they're just economically anxious. It's not like, you know, and the ones who say, well, you know, you're just as upset as, we were as upset as you were when Obama was elected. No, you're not. You were upset because a black man was in your White House. He didn't do a goddamn thing to you. On the other hand, we're upset because we're watching this country at risk of committing suicide. And that is terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. You know, there's a whole list out there. And we'll keep track of them over time. But for now, let's go back over and check in on line one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Mr. Kincaid.
Yes.
Andy.
Hey, Andy. How are you?
All right. Well, does everybody agree we're really going to a fascist state now?
I'm pretty well sold on, well, I don't know, going. I think we just got there.
I thought we were there before.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I think we had elements of it before, but you know, now we're going to start learning the goose step and run the flag up the pole, and, yeah.
Yes.
when on the one hand, a teacher in California, and again, California, you know, go figure, a teacher says, to her little scholars, your parents should be deported, but a junior high school teacher who also happens to be a Holocaust scholar in Mountain View tries to teach about the similarities between the rise of Trump and the rise of Hitler, he gets suspended. Ta-da!
And that was in Mountain View, huh? Well, they certainly are having the demonstrations here.
And, you know, and I'm not the one to say, you know, you should. I just want, my only concern. Oh God, here I go. Bob Kincaid, concern troll. I want us to have enough energy to take to the streets when we really, really, really have to. But maybe the people in the streets right now feel like they really, really have to right now.
Right. I was listening to your 11-9 program.
Oh, God, that was so long ago, I have no idea, but go ahead.
November 9th, the day after the election program. And you had a conversation there with Carol Baker.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, she was pretty hard on, you know, I'm in that category, kind of a good-for-nothing, working white male, just trying to get by around here. I thought she was pretty harsh.
Well,
the comments.
There are a lot of, this whole thing has been harsh, okay? I mean, there was a lot of harshness coming from the Purity Brigade when some of us said that, you know, we recognized that one of only two people could become president, so we were voting for Hillary. We're Democrats, so therefore we took the maybe the argument could be made that we took the double-edged blade and swung it in both directions.
Well, I just find it offensive to be stereotyped as a lazy, you know, good for nothing worker, and that's what.
I don't think she did, Andy.
Well, it was pretty clear to me that that's what came up. You know, it's because evidently the firm she works for hires a lot of immigrant labor. And, you know, there's always a reason for that, too. You know, other than that they will work. Sure, you'll work hard. If you have any chance of getting your green card taken away, like an H-1B visa that are all around me, if you know that's going to go, you're going to work your ass off and not upset the apple cart at the firm you're working for.
Well, in the case of the firm,
you're a docile employee, and that's what employers want.
In the case of the firm that Carol works for, she's the only white woman in the building.
Yeah, that's what she said.
And the ownership is Mexican here legally, and all the workers are here legally. And you know, it's not so much the being lazy and white as it is, I don't know, generational. You know, people who come here want to work to stay here. Give their kids and their kids' kids a couple of generations to keep their job, Bob.
They want to work to keep their family fed, and they probably have a bunch of dependents that they have to, like I said, keep in clothing, keep fed. So you're in desperation, and when you're in desperation, you can let a lot of things go. Like how you're treated as a worker. And that's what's happening. That's lowered the bar, you know, across the board. It's lowered wages. It's lowered benefits. It's lowered the way you're treated and the environment that you have at work. I mean, when you do things like that in the work environment, you know, people who make those comments like Ms. Baker did, I mean, there should be no wonder in anybody's mind why a guy like Trump won and got the white men's vote.
I think that's a little bit of a reach. I don't think Carol is personally responsible for the election of Donald Trump.
True, but I'm just saying, when you make those kind of stereotypical statements that white men are, you know, worthless workers and we're going to hire, I mean, that's kind of racist on its own, hire all.
No, what she said is they've had white guys come in to work there and they won't work. I remember now what you're talking about. It takes a minute for the wheels to turn and the steam to churn, but I remember what you're talking about now.
White guys won't work. That's kind of a strange statement. Where I work, everybody works. I don't care who you are. And we have a whole mix of people. And we're all hustling. And we're hustling for $13 an hour, which isn't even close to a living wage here.
Nowhere near it.
Man, but people bust their butts. Anyway. And during that same show, and you were commenting on it today, but I didn't see the same thing. But you really think that Bernie couldn't have done better if he were in there?
Better? Maybe he would.
No doubt.
Maybe he would have done better. Maybe he would have done better. But done better doesn't necessarily mean win, does it? I mean, maybe he would have won Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. But, you know, back during the primaries, you know, he won he won Wisconsin and Michigan and did so pretty handily. But he got his ass handed to him in Pennsylvania and I meant Wisconsin.
You're right,
and Michigan.
He did lose Pennsylvania, but
he got his gut stomped out in Florida.
He lost Ohio too.
And Florida. But the problem though is that in all of those primaries, more people showed up. I mean, there were primaries where more people showed up for Trump's vote alone than showed up for Hillary and Bernie combined. Check me, I don't think I'm wrong on that. Because I remember looking at it at the time and going, oh, something's going to have to change.
Right. Well, regardless of what happened in the primary, when it came down to just one-on-one, the two candidates, Trump and Hillary, after the primaries were over. There was a professor from MIT, and I can't remember his name, but he wrote a paper, and he was a political science professor. And the paper essentially said that it would be very, very hard for Trump to argue against Bernie, because all of Bernie's strong points were Trump's strong points. And actually, you could almost bring up to Trump comments that were made by Bernie he thought were his own comments.
Oh, after a while, Andy, Trump got to where he was just bogarting Bernie's ideas, and he also along the way he dog whistled to Bernie's supporters.
Well, your former comment then buttresses my point that what this professor at MIT was saying, it would be very, very hard for Trump to attack Bernie like he attacked Ms. Clinton, because she was the old school, she was there, and she took the wrong positions on, say, free trade, TTIP, TPP. I mean, he hit that in infinitum. You know, he buried her with that. And that, of course, played super well in the Rust Belt states.
Well, maybe you and I have a difference of opinion here, Andy, but I want to get mine out on the table. And that is, I don't think Bernie was going to reach the people who spray paint swastikas on churches. And I think those people are a hell of a lot higher percentage of the American heartland electorate than I would say the mainstream commentariat do. I've got this thing.
The people
I call
that spray paint swastikas on churches.
Yes.
How much of the electorate do you think would do something like that?
I think the people who do it and who will not and who will not criticize it and who blink at it is probably like what Hillary Clinton said, about half of Trump's support.
Oh, come on.
I absolutely do.
Please.
Try it some. Nah. Now, I mean, you live out there, so you're not
you
like
made the same argument. You made the same stereotyping argument with Nigel Farage and the UKIP party in the UK.
No, the same. Yeah. The argument
there,
that
there
I,
are people
Andy
like
the
that.
The
I,
Andy.
I agree with that, but that kind of percentage.
Are you watching the Andy? I know you're tied into the news. You've got to be watching it. This country is on fire right now with people being attacked by Trump supporters. Okay? Now,
that's not a very big percentage of Trump. There are.
Well, how big does it have to get, Andy, before you acknowledge that it's a problem?
I didn't say it wasn't a problem. I'm just saying it's not. There's a lot of regular people out there. And I know because a lot of more of my relatives back in New Jersey who voted for Trump. And no matter what I would say to them, no matter what I have said to them in the past, they're staunch military Republicans. And that's what they do. And they don't have college educations. It's hard to communicate with them. They don't critically think. And I'm sorry, there's a lot of Americans across this country who in other environments, other engaging conversations you talk with them are decent people.
Well,
live decent lives and want to just get by, but
I've developed something
I've developed
something, Andy, and I invite you to try it. It's called the 5-minute rule. It's called the 5-minute Trump rule. Talk to a Trumpansie for 5 minutes. And at first,
you know,
they'll
even you using the term
stop. Wait.
You automatically discounted them.
Yes,
I mean they're people.
Andy,
they're
listen, them. Andy, you interrupted me. Just hear the idea out. Spend 5 minutes talking to one of them. Maybe in minute one, they're like, "Well, I'm worried about trade deals." If you press them on it, they can't tell you anything because they don't know. But within 5 minutes' time, they will say something absolutely, and I use this word advisedly, deplorable. For instance, you can have somebody object, and you know, I saw this happen. It's happened to me. Object to me saying that this woman in West Virginia who referred to Michelle Obama as an ape in high heels. I posted on Facebook that she was just another one of those poor, economically anxious white people that us elites don't understand, and that we just haven't figured out a way to reach out and talk to Mary Sue Meth Gobbler. Because that's what the geniuses who all told us that Hillary was going to win, that's what they're saying now by way of a postmortem. You know, it's just that they've got economic anxiety and we don't know how to talk to them. Okay, so I posted that. So out of nowhere, somebody who's never posted on my wall before chimes in from Mississippi to tell us about how she voted conservative and how Trump won in a landslide and we need to get over it and leave the country. Okay?
Well, they used to say that during the 60s, too.
5 minutes, and employing the 5-minute rule, it wasn't long after that that she said that she wanted Hillary Clinton put before a firing squad. Now, I know you hate her. She's not my favorite. There's a lot to object to, but I don't think you or I want Hillary Clinton lined up against a wall and murdered.
Well, nor do I want to. Quite frankly, nor do I want to see what happened to John F. Kennedy happen to anybody else.
Right.
That's not going to get us anywhere.
Right. But my point, Andy, is that and again, I've seen this happen time after time after time. You start talking to one of these people, and within about 5 minutes, they have said something absolutely repugnant, utterly hateful. Whether it's the word with two G's and I and E and R and an N that isn't ginger, or whether it's round up the immigrants, or whether it's the homos are going to hell. The thing is, Trump provided them a big, big, broad umbrella to get under with their hate. And I say, and you disagree with me, and I understand that.
I disagree with your percentages.
I know. That's what you disagree with. I say that this country is far more hateful, far more racist than anybody even dares to think about. I at least am daring to consider it. What if I'm right, Andy?
Well, it's hard to prove that you're right, but I disagree with you. And I it was the same thing with Hillary using the term deplorables for the people that support Trump. If you're going to win friends and influence people, you don't use ad hominem attacks.
She's a terrible candidate, Andy. We know that. You knew that. I knew that. She's a terrible candidate. But the thing is, even with that basket of deplorables, inartful, clunky, clumsy remark, she didn't say all Trump voters are in the basket of deplorables. She said there are about half who have legitimate grievances, and there are about half who belong in the basket of deplorables. And then, you know, I would say that if you really want to nuance the thing, Andy, there's actually a Venn diagram where there's overlap between the two. Okay, for instance, like I've mentioned before, the cop who got a hero's funeral for getting gunned down in Dallas and yet was covered up in white supremacist tattoos. Okay? I mean, these things exist.
Sure.
And there are stories far and wide. My God, some of the most horrifying stories are coming out of California, Andy. The woman who was walking along wearing her hijab and got it ripped off of her and told to, you know, go back where she came from.
Lot of demonstrations here in California. And there's a lot of people on the street who believe if you're here when you're not supposed to be here, right, that's okay. And quite frankly, I have to say, too, I'm not in that camp. If you're here and you're taking a job from somebody where 13 million people got knocked off the job rolls when Mr. Obama took office, we had 66% job participation. Now we're down to 62. 13 million people, and then jobs never came back. And you have people here that are working under the table, working here when they're not supposed to be here. I'm sorry. That puts downward pressure on wages, benefits, and an individual's ability to get back on their feet and get a job.
Okay, so what's the remedy?
And because we have a supply and demand problem, and we're surplus.
Well, Andy, unfortunately, Andy, we're at the end of the program. I would love to continue this conversation, because I think there are two different ways of coming up with a remedy to that situation. I think you bring people out of the shadows and into the daylight economy. I think you let them contribute fully to the tax base. You let them contribute to Social Security.
No, there would have been a way to take care of it. It would have been doing what we did during the New Deal and creating jobs by the government.
But the answer is not to round them up and put them in camps.
We needed to create jobs here, and we didn't do it.
Well,
and that's why
like
we
I said,
Mr. Trump.
Like I said, Andy, I'm out of here.
I really think it comes down to economics, Bob. All right.
All right, later.
Have a good one.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's Andy out in California, and that's a conversation to continue. See, maybe this is why this needs to be a six-hour program. But I want to thank everybody for meeting all the challenges. Thank you very, very kindly. Hey, good news on the way out the door. Robert near Morgantown tells me a representative from the Clay County Development Corporation has confirmed that Pamela Ramsey Taylor has been removed from her position. The representative was unable to make further comment. So, you know, a little bit of justice. But thanks, everybody, for making all this happen. This is only Monday. Titanic Tuesday will be here before you know it. We'll talk soon. Thanks, everybody. Always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night now.